All stations, all stations, all call signs. This is Wrecker Actual, over. Stand by for transmission. Prepare to copy. This is American Vindicta.
Military contractor and DHS federal officer, former, and now current broadcaster. You may have heard of him, the American Vindicta Show. We'll talk more about that later. We're going to kind of do things a little different now. I've done this in other venues, but maybe not quite to the detail we have here. But as some of you know, my dad was involved in some real interesting stuff. And he shared a lot with me before he passed. And then this kind of brought me to an NSA guy that you, by the way, know. I've interviewed Vance Davis many times. And then Jim Mars, Bill Pollack, so forth. So we thought we'd go through and say, when I talk about the secret space program and hidden technology and the quantum physics not known to most people, where do I get this information? So we thought it was maybe time that I told the story here on this venue. So, Doug, why don't you kind of take it away and take it where you will?
Well, what I'd like to know is, and you know, me and you did this a few years ago, and it's fascinating to hear your background story of where this whole thing started, because it originates with Nazi Germany. You know, your father's work with Nazi scientists. For me, I am a huge history buff, and Nazi Germany has completely captured my imagination as to how a country could ever get so technologically advanced and devious and tyrannical all at the same time and almost win. That's the interesting thing. They almost won World War II if they just would have stopped with the black magic and worked more on their industrial complex. They probably actually would have owned all of Europe. But your dad had dealings with them. Now, I'll let you get into this, but your dad surmised to you before he passed, and, you know, years of your dad telling you bits and pieces because of NDAs and other things, he couldn't tell you everything. And you obviously had meetings or interviews with a guy kind of like me at one point in time in your life, coming and asking you questions about your dad and what you knew. And I'm sure that, you know, that's interesting, especially as a young child. But, you know, what the fans want to know, what people want to know, is what did your dad do? What did he know? Because it really does correlate to what we see now with a lot of the information and technology that is out there. Your dad was along those lines of helping to resurrect from nowhere this entire atmosphere, I guess you could say, of modernization of the military, and a lot of it came from the Nazis. Am I correct in saying that?
Yeah, well, my family on my dad's side's wholly German. And I used, because they lived with us when I was young, I used to be fluent in German. I've lost most of it now. I can watch the war movies, and, you know, when they speak the German, I can understand quite a bit of it, like the old combat series. Sometimes I'll watch it on YouTube, and I can make out maybe a third of what they're saying. At one time, I was fully fluent. And I'm talking 3, 4, 5, 6 years of age. So anyway, long story short here with my dad, he enlisted out of high school. He showed an aptitude for engineering and physics. And so they educated him right away. And they commissioned him to be an ensign. And that's what he was at Pearl Harbor. And he wasn't in real long before Pearl Harbor. And he told me that part of his mission at Pearl Harbor, I've never really told this story before. I don't think it's terribly significant, except to say that we were trying to provoke the Japanese to attack, much like what Biden's doing with Putin in Ukraine. But they went around to some of the old radar, the old ships, the Spanish-American war vessels, and they put on fake radar. They knew the Japanese were there spying, and they put on a show for them. And they wanted to make them think, well, they're putting radar on because they're going to be supporting aircraft carriers going against Japan for their expansion in the Pacific. This is the mantra they were trying to show. So these light cruisers and destroyers were all getting fake radar. Not all of them were manned. And they didn't hook him up, but they never told him why they were doing this. They would be halfway through a project. They go, okay, that's it. Move on to the next ship. And then Pearl Harbor happened 2 weeks after that when he was there. He was back in San Diego. So he served through the war. And something my sister told me after he died, that's a really weird story. He was actually putting radar on a destroyer when they were attacked by Japanese Zeros, and he got wounded. Wasn't serious, but it was serious enough to go to sick bay for 3 days. And he never got a Purple Heart. That's what I asked my sister. I said, well, how come he never got a Purple Heart? And she said, because they were moving him into intelligence and they were creating a false persona. Different rank assignment, different unit, different everything. And then he was tasked with getting into high-level sonar, radar, and so forth that was starting to come online. And I remember I said he had the training very quickly. So he was an electrical mechanical engineer and also was educated in physics. So he goes to the war, and then he does a lot of post-war intel analysis stuff, mostly interviewing German POWs and scientists because he spoke fluent German. And he then got assigned to the carrier Roosevelt. And there he was with an admiral who became a fast family friend. And let's put it this way. There's been some of the family tree of this admiral I still have contact with. And some of them have done pretty remarkable things in the military. And I know some of it. So, you know, I just kind of revealed a little bit about two of my sources. So anyway, they were tasked with a mission on the carrier Roosevelt to put the first nuclear weapons on a Navy ship. My dad's specific task was to be in charge of rewiring the Combat Information Center to make it push-button control from the CIC for nuclear weapons. And they put overrides in another place of the ship. And they left out of Jacksonville. And I can remember being just a real small child. And he called from Jacksonville before they took off. And you could barely hear him. And later he said, that's because everybody in the world was listening to us. Make sure we didn't say anything wrong. We're all allowed to call our families. And he was gone for the better part of 18 months. And so I can't find these anymore. I used to have slides of my dad. He was in Rio de Janeiro. They were traveling down the coast of South America on the way to where they're going to do the install of the nukes. And they were at Sugarloaf Mountain. And so it was pretty cool. I saw this as an adult. And my niece, my sister has now passed. And my niece and I tried to find these. And we're still looking. She probably has them somewhere in her stash from her mom's stuff. But anyway, they traveled around Cape Horn. And that's where they did their due diligence. That's where they put in the nukes. They did it over a four-day period, although the CIC work was ongoing for the whole trip pretty much. But they transferred the nukes over a four-day period. But here's an interesting story, Doug. And this actually ended up on the TV show Sightings, but they didn't report the fact that they were putting nuclear weapons on this carrier. They said, while the Roosevelt was sailing down in South America, they were followed by glowing orbs. And my mom and I were watching the show after my dad died. She goes, what the hell? She goes, that was your dad's ship. And I said, yeah, I know. And he had told me about the orbs. And, you know, he didn't want me to really upset her. So I never really told her a lot. And he didn't tell her hardly anything. And he made me promise, though, that the stuff he'll tell me in 1984, 1985, which were details of what he did, and mostly the interaction with the Germans, that I couldn't talk about this at all, at least until my mom passed. And he also said, there's probably three or four things on here you should never talk about unless you want your car to be blown up or have the people come knock on your door. And I started to get into inner circles of different groups, astronauts, intelligence figures, scientists, And it's, this is how it happened. And so my dad fills me with all this knowledge, 84, 85. I can't talk about it. Never talked about it. Never shared it with anybody until 1992. My good friend, and you've heard me talk about him, Vance Davis. I've known Vance for 30 years now. And Vance was on Art Bell's show. It was the first time I ever heard Art on the radio. I thought, this is a cool show. And Vance is on there talking about the secret space program. Now, my dad wasn't involved in the secret space program, but the stuff he worked on went to the secret space program, and he deduced that because it never went to NASA. And so I heard Vance on there, and I said, you know, I bet I could have someone to talk to about this stuff if I got a hold of Vance, because he's obviously talking. Now, Vance was ex-NSA, ex-NATO, interesting background, another story, another time. But it wasn't the internet then, so getting a hold of Vance was hard. And I went through a bunch of channels, and eventually I left a message. But it wasn't Vance that called me back. It was a gentleman named Bill Pollack, who's now passed. His wife, Annie, will one day become my news director on my radio show for 6.5 years. And this guy, Bill Pollack, calls me, and Bill was ex-Intel, had served also in the Air Force. He calls me, and he says, so you want to talk to Vance? What about? And I said, well, I got to be pretty guarded on this because my dad gave me information, and I'm really not at liberty to discuss it publicly. But I can talk about it with Vance because he mentioned some things that I'm not supposed to talk about. And he said, okay, since he said it publicly, tell me. And I talked about two things. He asked me three questions, and he said, you're for real. I'm going to hook you up with Vance. So he was sent to just check me out. Well, the three of us will become best friends over the years. And as I said, my whole world changed at that time. They were involved with astronauts, and I can't mention a lot of them because some of them are still alive, but I can tell you about Edgar Mitchell. He was involved in our group. And Bill Pollack used to have gatherings with people, and they'd be astronauts, scientists, top media people like Richard Hoagland, who worked for Walter Cronkite and then later was attached to NASA. And that's where he learned a lot of his stuff about hyperdimensional physics. And so all these people come in, and there'd be maybe 15, 20 of us, and we'd all tell our story. We had three of those briefings beginning in 1997. And Bill and I and Vance did some business ventures together, but mostly I really learned this is what it was all about. And then, that same year, I was doing some public appearances on the Kennedy assassination because I was self-educated on, interviewed people, had actually added a couple initial contributions. And Bill Pollack said, would you like to meet Jim Mars? And I said, oh, yeah, yes, absolutely, because I thought Jim was the best guy on the Kennedy assassination that I had ever heard. And so Bill flew him in to meet me in Phoenix. And we didn't talk about Kennedy. We talked about the secret space program. And Jim knew a lot. Jim was probably the best researcher I have ever met. It was a sad day for me when he passed. As people will know on my old radio show, he used to come on all the time. He was a guest probably once a month. And he was a high demand guy, but we got to be really good friends. So he knew about the secret space program too. And he was tied to this group as well. So I really grew in knowledge, and it really made me appreciate my dad's work. So let's focus on what he told me in 84, 85, and then I'll go back to this think tank of group people. Now, this is before, Doug, I wasn't in the media then. I won't start even writing an article until 2003, 2004, when McCain and his international bankers tried to steal my property and that of my neighbors. That's what got me in the media. But I was just involved with this group as an interested party. I was still teaching and coaching. So, okay, let's go to some of the crux of what my dad told me. The one thing that really stands out in my memory is he said to the Germans, one at a time, he said, how the hell did you get this far ahead of us? He said, you're 200-300 years ahead. And they said, well, it was from aliens. And my dad said, well, did you ever meet them? And they said, well, no, we didn't, but our commanders did. And my dad knew about the occultic practices of the Nazis. And so he thought, okay, probably demons. They're probably channeling them. And oh, by the way, that's what Vance Davis was doing when he left the military. He deserted along with six other people. They had ordered them to channel beings through a Ouija board. I'm not joking when I say that. And they were involved in high-tech investigations. So this is something very consistent with what my dad was thinking. And my dad never believed it was aliens. He said, I think they channeled demonic entities. And he actually came to the conclusion, because he knew about Project Bluebeam, and that's been around for a long time. And he said that he wouldn't be surprised one day if we didn't have a fake alien invasion accompanied by advanced technology to fake the event. And he said the Germans probably could have pulled it off. So anyway, he rejected the alien deal, but he asked him, he says, this knowledge here, he said, how much of it did the Germans develop versus what was handed to you? He said, we might have developed 10 to 15%. And this is where I heard about a guy named Heisenberg. Have you ever heard of him, Doug?
No, I haven't.
Okay. Heisenberg was the father of the German Uranium Club, in other words, nuclear bomb project. And he was not a member of the Nazi party, but he was the most brilliant of them all. Beta and Szilárd, these guys that fled Germany, fled the Nazis and came to America, became part of the Manhattan Project. He was in charge of all of them. And they've tried to discredit him and what happened. Let me tell his story, because I think this is really interesting. This was German based. This did not come from demonic spirits or aliens. They had developed the technology to do an atomic bomb explosion. Szilárd went to Heisenberg and said, I was watching a traffic light the other day and I realized to do the explosion, you have to have a chain reaction. He watched the green, yellow, red, and he goes, chain reaction. And that triggered his thinking along the lines of physics. And that started Heisenberg doing research, and he knew how to do it. Now, here's what's interesting. Mo Burke, who was a third-string catcher for the Yankees, but spoke fluent German, he was recruited by the OSS to go. He was a spy, and he was recruited to go to Germany to assassinate Heisenberg.
Yeah, but he doesn't assassinate him.
He didn't assassinate him. No, he goes there and he's walking with him through the streets of Zurich. He's acting like an aging graduate student, asking him full of questions. And he's thinking, this guy's no threat to anybody. So he didn't kill him. Now, here's what's interesting about Heisenberg. Hitler actually came to visit him personally and says, can you give me a super bomb? And he says, well, we might, but he was holding it from Hitler on purpose. He didn't want Hitler to have it. So he told Hitler, we might, but you're better off spending the vast amounts of money on conventional military and winning the war that way.
So this is where the America Bomber Project comes into view.
Yeah.
So Heisenberg, now you've jarred my memory. Heisenberg stalled it by not completing the heavy water.
Exactly.
That was being tested, I believe, in Norway. Now, with the America Bomber Project, this is one of my big beasts with the father of NASA. They were creating a multi-stage rocket, and that was originally being developed before Goebbels got a hold of the rocket program and then turned it into Vengeance 1 and Vengeance 2. But originally, the America Bomber Project was the ability to launch a atomic weapon from Norway all the way to New York City or Washington, D.C.
Correct.
And Heisenberg was the one who actually stalled that, because he didn't want mass death. And that's how he got Hitler to actually go with creating all the very unconventional airplanes that we use now, like the flying wing, which is where you get the B-2 stealth bomber from. Also, what people consider to be the TR-3B Manta, that came from Germany way back in the day. And that was all developed. Werner von Braun was one of the main guys doing this in order to be able to deliver a bomb from Europe to there. They created over 1,000 different prototypes to include two different bombers. If I may exaggerate this a little bit, I'd have to look up my notes. I haven't looked over this in a while, but the plane that they were going to use was going to be probably the biggest airplane ever built in history. It would have been bigger than our galaxy airplanes just to deliver this so that it could do an intercontinental flight. Because back then, the intercontinental flight for something that big was just not there yet. And they weren't going to deliver one bomb. They were going to deliver multiple bombs and continue to push inward into the continental United States and more or less carpet bomb with atomic weapons from the East Coast to the West Coast. That was one of the proposals. I learned that when I was looking up stuff through Germany's history that you can actually find. It's a German website, and you can actually see their notes where they were actually writing these notes to Hitler and talking about all these proposals. And it was Wernher von Braun who created the second stage and the third stage rockets, which we eventually use as the Saturn rockets to get us into space. That original rocket was made to deliver an atomic weapon to New York. And we knew it. Yeah. OSS knew it. British intelligence knew it. But Wernher von Braun called himself the more or less the golden calf, the rocket program, and that no one would kill him because they were so advanced. And this is what I find interesting. Do you think your dad would say that technology for the America Bomber project, the rocketry, was that originally created by the Germans there, or do you think that's where they started to get help? Because this is
their rocketry
at that point in time.
They made it was the heavy water that Heisenberg did.
Yeah,
but what you're describing here about two and three stage rockets, like the V2, for example, is the first generation of that. That came to them through other sources, let's say.
Yeah, because
that part I know.
The OSS said that their rocket program was decades, and they said decades. They said between 50 and 80 years in advance. Others have said that it was 200 years in advance. The type of technology.
200 to 300 years is what my dad said. And he said we had the ability on paper to teleport inanimate objects. And we know in Leipzig, Germany in 2011, they actually teleported an inanimate object from one side of a large laboratory to another. So this all fits. Let me share with you one thing about Heisenberg, though. And I'm telling the story for a reason to come back to my dad. Heisenberg, like I said, made the conscious decision Hitler could not have this weapon. And so he actually gave intelligence information to the OSS. They passed it on to the British, and they launched the raid on Norway that destroyed the heavy water factory. And it was Heisenberg that was part of giving the information. The thinking is a mutual contact between him and Beta, and Beta had already gone to the United States, and they were able to get that information to Beta. It went to Einstein and then Roosevelt, and that was the trace. Here's what's interesting. Beta and Szilard are egotistical bastards. They were brilliant scientists, and we owe them a lot because we got the bomb before the Germans could have. And the Japanese were working on a bomb, too, at the end of the war.
That's right.
And so we owe these guys a debt of gratitude for doing the right thing. But here's the thing that pissed me off. There was a History Channel special that you can no longer get. I think they scrubbed it because it told too much. And they told pretty much about 80% of what we've already talked about. And at the end of the war, Heisenberg was captured, and he was taken to Wembley House in Britain. And they came and told him, the Americans just dropped an atomic bomb on Japan. It was the first bomb. He sat down and sketched out the chain reaction on how it happened. And he gave it to them and says, yeah, this is how they did it. And see, it was all in question. Now, he wouldn't tell them he knew how to do this. They had grilled him like you wouldn't believe. And then finally he said, now I can tell you because you know it's real. He knew how to do it and showed the British intel officers and scientists this is how it was done. And he was 100% accurate on how it was done. And it makes sense because he worked with Szilard and Beta and these guys. And before the war started, they were on the same page with stuff. Einstein was working with them. And as a consequence, Doug, he knew every step of the way. He could have handed nuclear bombs to Hitler, and Hitler would have ruled the world. We'd have been a burned out cinder here in America. Now, let me tell you about the Heisenberg, bring it back to my dad real quick. Heisenberg and Wernher von Braun, my dad was well aware of this story because he was coming out of naval intelligence. He knew all about this. He had a need to know, and he had an operation involved in this. And he knew that how close we were to losing the war, and he understood why they brought the Germans here. He didn't like them. He thought they served the evil ones. He thought they were satanic, and a lot of them were. They were still under the occult practices. But he had respect for Wernher von Braun. But here's the thing that puzzled him. He couldn't understand how you take the father of rocketry in Germany, put him in charge of NASA, but give him puff guns rather than, you know, like he was like taking a butter knife to a gunfight because they weren't giving him the stuff they were working on. My dad said some of the stuff they were working on with vertical liftoff, like the Harrier jet that we know now, he said that could have been operational in 18 months from where they had it. And he said they didn't understand why NASA wasn't using this technology. He told me in 1984, we have the ability not to use hydrogen rockets to lift off a pad with three stages. He said we can vertical lift right into space. He said we've known how to do it since we worked with the Germans in the 50s and 60s.
Would that be de Glock?
You mean the bell, the Nazi bell?
Yep.
Yeah. Jim Mars and I had, that's part of what we talked about when he flew to Phoenix to meet me. Yeah. But you know, they killed everyone connected to the bell.
Well, what's interesting,
all the scientists were wiped out, so they weren't able to get that technology.
Yeah. One of the things that's interesting about the Glock, and there's so much speculation, conspiracy theory around it. It's, you know, as a proper investigator, it's hard to really try and find historical accuracy and back it up with government documents. Part of it was the occultism that was very, very heavy. A lot of like druid like occultism that was around the main platform that held the Glock. And they said that on some of the different times that they awakened the machine, more or less, that it could bend space time, that it could sit there and levitate. The propulsion was very unfamiliar to them, but today you would say that that propulsion capability is what we see with the UFOs or, you know, unidentified aerial phenomena. And there were other things that they had created. The nomenclature of this device slips my mind, but it was actually brought into Area 51, into Groom Lake, probably in the 50s or 60s.
Well, it was before that. It was over Germany with the Foo Fighters.
Yeah, it was. The one that we tried to recreate was more or less stolen from the Germans, but it was the big donut with like a box fan underneath it. I forget the nomenclature of it. Forgive me. But that's something that we tried working on, and it was a one-man operating vessel, and it more or less just levitated off the ground through the force of pressing air downward, and they could actually maneuver it. And part of the reason was is that they said it could be used over minefields. You know, it could just slip right across a minefield.
Sure.
But, you know, to me, when you look at that type of technology, that's, you know, JV team compared to some of the other stuff that your dad said that the Nazis were working on. So we talked about where he thought the technology came from, or where they said the technology came from.
Yeah, but I have an answer for some of what you're saying.
Okay.
It goes back to Roswell.
Yes, it does.
The purpose behind Roswell. My dad did not believe the alien story about Roswell. Whether that's true with aliens or not, we can debate. I know there's credible witnesses that talk about the bodies, Colonel Corso and so forth. But my dad says it was one of two things, because I asked him specifically about Roswell, because Roswell kind of surfaced in the 70s as kind of like, gee, look what happened back in 47, and we just ignored it with a delayed reaction. And I asked him, he said, we did have high altitude surveillance balloons with dummies in them to test them for atmospheric effects. And he said, that's probably what hit. But he goes, I'll give you another possibility. He goes, I know about Project Bluebeam. And Doug, this has been around since the 60s. That's when it was invented by the CIA. And he said, fake alien invasion. And he said, I think they serve two masters. And he said, my primary belief is not that it was a weather balloon or that it was aliens. He says, whatever they got to get people to believe it was aliens was probably a deception. He said, what I think it is, they served two goals at one time. Number one, Let's bring in advanced technology following an alien event that people always suspect. So we get night vision, we get this, we get that, we get the other, when they're really channeling it from satanic forces. And the Germans are now showing the Americans how to do this. And this was his belief. He said, whatever the Germans used, he said the American intel could have done the same thing and started channeling technology in. So you have two purposes behind Roswell in my dad's mind. One was to have a cover story for how you could get this advanced technology, deny the aliens, but make your denial so bad that people really suspect it is true. So the aliens covers up the fact you're really working with Satan's minions. Okay. And also it covers up the fact, because, you know, Operation Paperclip was highly classified at that time. And so to cover up the fact that you're actually working with German scientists, can you imagine how the American would have felt that we lost 600,000 people in World War II, and it's discovered within 2 years after the war, we're actually working with the people that we defeated rather than punishing them for their crimes against humanity, like the London Blitz and all that. So I understand what the motivation was. And I think my dad's story is probably closer to the truth than it's not. Now, this was all just hypothesis on his part. He said, I don't have any hardcore evidence except for the fact I've interviewed enough of these Germans to know that this is their mindset. And they knew they could keep themselves alive and avoid Nuremberg for their role in the London Blitz. And you notice they didn't prosecute the London Blitz people, did they? They didn't go after the rocket people like they did the Nazi death camp guards. And these guys were just as guilty of genocide. And hell, they were killing old people, children in the Blitz. They were indiscriminately bombing schools on purpose. So they should have been tried for crimes for humanity, but we had a use for them. And so that's what I think Roswell was. But Roswell was kind of a genesis of, let's bring in all this advanced technology that we have based on hyperdimensional or quantum physics. I think the most notable advance at that time was probably night vision.
Yeah, and heat vision. That was another one that the
Nazis created. Yeah, thermal imaging, exactly. Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, that was an interesting thing, because we didn't have that at that point in time. You know, you mentioned the paperclip files. As you know, I've done quite a bit of study into this. Prior to there being Project Paperclip, you had Project Ashcan and Project Dustpan. And that was the OSS that was actually going around, and they were more or less sneaking German scientists out of Germany by putting them on American bases in Germany and hiding them from the British intelligence services.
That's true.
So what's interesting is, when you look at Project Paperclip and how we brought Nazis from Germany to America, and then almost immediately within the 50s, what happens? The CIA is created. And then you have a whole
list. Then the NSA too.
And then the NSA. You have a whole list of dossiers that are here. You know, you have a operation, I think it's Overcast, that came before Paperclip, which was like the finalization of, okay, these are the guys that were willing to smuggle out and ignore crimes. Now, they did go through a denazification, but they were still Nazis. Now, one thing that I thought was interesting was, you have, you know, MK Ultra, which was, and then they have another one, Sub Project 58. I think that's called God's Flesh, and that has to do with ESPs. So we're going to get to ESPs in just a second, because you and I can ramble like two crazy guys about ESP. But when the Nazis came over here with Project Paperclip, you have so many other different things that start happening. You have this big New Age religion that starts to peek about within America that was at that point in time in Germany. In Austria. And so that gets brought over here. And then we have the CIA, MK Ultra, Mockingbird, and all these other really devious things that were all brought out by Nazi German scientists. And they just continued their research. Did your dad ever question why they were allowed to continue the research? Was it for the benefit of the United States?
That's a tricky question. The answer is yes and no. And the reason I say, Doug, it's yes and no, he used to bring under guard and violated all kinds of rules in doing this. He'd bring some of the German scientists to our house, and my mom and sister and I would have to leave. And we were got a phone call ahead of time, and he'd say, get the kids out. We're coming with some people. You can't be there. So go invent something to do. And they would bring one or two of them at a time, and they felt they could go there because, you know, my dad's house was always checked for surveillance devices and so forth, listening devices, and they knew the house was clean. The reason they were doing this is because the CIA was already rogue. It was already working against American interests. My dad's favorite saying about the CIA, he said, if they could make a nickel, they'd sell their own mother down the river. He said, every one of these guys is an inglorious bastard who probably served Satan. He hated the CIA with a passion. And then when Kennedy was killed, he told me, he told mom, I was too young for him to make any sense with me on that, but he said that the CIA did it.
Right.
He said, absolutely convinced the CIA did it. And she asked him why. And my mom and I actually talked about this later. Vietnam, other things, but mostly Vietnam. He was right on the money. In fact, actually, to show you where my dad's loyalty lies, he was. We were watching a show that used to be on after The Tonight Show and Johnny Carson. It was called The Tomorrow Show with Tom Snyder. And he had on a guy, an intel officer, and that's all they called him. His face is blacked out. His voice is modulated. And he said something really interesting. He said, whoever killed John Kennedy killed Bobby and killed Martin Luther King. And he started to go through a diary for all three, single assassin acting alone, a motive that made no damn sense whatsoever. And my dad looked at me and he goes, what do you think? And I think I was probably about 11 or 12. He goes, what do you think? And I said, I never thought of it that way. Did that really happen? Because I didn't know the details of all these assassinations yet. And he says, yeah, he goes, it happened that way. So he hated the CIA. So back to your question. Why did they allow him to do it? Okay, my dad saw a benefit in gleaning the technology because we're deep into the Cold War and we know the Russians have nukes. The Russians can't dare get what we're getting from the these scientists. So he saw the necessity. He didn't trust the CIA would not betray America if it would benefit their organization and their members. And the CIA is also, a lot of people don't want to believe this, but it's true. They're a benefactor operation. In other words, they're controlled. They're not serving the U.S. government. They're not under the control of the president. They serve benefactors around the world, and they could care less if China invades America or Russia nukes America, as long as they're not in the way when it happens.
So do you think that's where Eisenhower's speech about the industrial complex has to do with the CIA and their various operations? Obviously, the DIA is tangled up with that as well.
Yeah, the DIA was an operational arm. It really wasn't a policy arm. The CIA was a policy arm. And the CIA was behind drug trafficking in the Mekong Delta and throughout the Golden Triangle in Asia, Southeast Asia. That's why they wanted the Vietnam War. You know what they did? This is not, let's put it this way. I don't think most Americans know this, but I've heard this discussed on talk shows, and it's correct. They started having morticians paid off in Vietnam that would stuff dead bodies with heroin to bring back to, I'm sure you know about this.
U.S. troops.
U.S. troops would come back with heroin embedded in their dead bodies. Yep. And then it would be removed on the other side. And it was just a big drug operation. And the CIA was at the center of all of it. So, we could do a whole show on the CIA. I know for a fact the CIA started the Clinton Foundation and used her to do a lot of their dirty work. Their bank of choice is HSBC. We know what they're about. So, we could do a whole show on this. I've written articles and done shows on HSBC Bank. I've interviewed a guy. I had to get him on your show, John Cruz. I love this man. He exposed Clinton Foundation crimes when he was the senior VP at HSBC, but he was not on the criminal side. But he uncovered the criminal side and all the money laundering, and the Clinton Foundation was at the center of it. And let's put it this way. He's lucky to be alive, but he learned the art of dead man switches.
Right.
And he's been on my show three times. It's a terrific story. But I want to go back to my dad a little bit more. He brought the Germans once in a while to the house. They also had a Russian, too, that they were working with at the same time. The Russian was bilingual, very intelligent, and he had been captured by the Germans, and then we captured him when he was with the Germans, and they brought him, and this was my dad's big concern. He understood a lot about quantum mechanics, and he said, there's no way the frickin' Russian should have been there. He said, this scared the hell out of me, because we were getting stuff, vertical takeoff, 0 to 10,000 miles an hour on the drawing boards in a matter of seconds. You like the tic-tac videos. They were doing that on the drawing boards in the 60s, and this Russian had full knowledge of this. And my dad said that scared the hell out of me, because how close were the Russians to doing this? And that would change power dynamics on the planet, because the Cold War was real.
Right.
Now, the Cold War was built up so people could also make money. We exaggerated the threat of the Russian nuclear, the prowess of the nuclear force. About a fourth of the missiles would have failed on launch, they estimated, after the disarmament treaties, and we inspected the Russian missiles. So their numbers were greatly exaggerated by the CIA on behalf of the military-industrial complex so they could justify building more weapons here and making a hell of a lot more money. So when Eisenhower made that speech about beware of the military-industrial complex, its influence is unprecedented. He was correct. And then he also said it was unwarranted, meaning it's unconstitutional. It exactly is. We live today under a globalist military dictatorship tied into banking. And out of that comes drug trafficking, child sex trafficking, and so forth. I mean, that's the real mafia on the planet today. I'm sure you're aware of that.
One protects the other and one facilitates the other.
Yeah, and then they use people as they want. By the way, did you see, who was it that was found dead today? A Clinton aide with ties to Epstein was found hung and shot in his hotel room.
I don't know how he committed suicide like that. He probably shot himself before he hung himself, or hung himself and then shot himself.
Yeah. Well, the best suicide story, Nancy Schaefer, former Georgia state senator, was out investigating CPS trafficking kids out. And they said her husband killed her and then committed suicide. Yeah, he shot her. Don't know anything about that, according to the forensics, you could make that case. But then he committed suicide by shooting himself in the back of his neck. Exactly. And he traveled with her everywhere. She was doing presentations in Europe on this topic. They killed her because of what she was saying.
Well, there was another person that was tied to the Clintons that shot himself in the back of the head 3 times with a revolver.
Yeah.
You know, there was a member of Congress who was decapitated almost by his when he was working out in his garage with a 45-pound barbell, and I believe it had like a 25-pound on each side. That's not how that happens. How that happens is someone stands over the top of you and presses the bar through the trachea, then it actually, I think, broke the vertebrae. I mean, that's a lot of force. And anyways, get back to what your dad was talking
about. Let's bring this forward now. Now, it's interesting, too, because he had 6 months left on his tour, his service. He was at 19 years, 6 months. And at that time, the military didn't give you early outs and give you retirement.
You had to do the full 20.
Yeah. Well, he completed the FDR tour. And they said, go take 10 days off with your family. So at that time, my mom and sister and I were living with my grandmother in Iowa. And he comes to Iowa for 10 days. And then I guess he came home and told my mom, we're moving to Denver. I've got a job there working for the government. And that's where the Operation Paperclip entered his life. So that's, I mean, talk about it. I was just a little kid. I wasn't even in school yet. And I remember he left my one grandma's house to walk to his mom's house to say goodbye. And then he was going to get a ride to the airport in Des Moines and then drive and then fly out to Denver and find a house for us. But I still remember that as a little kid, as the memory. And part of it, I remember it because he was always leaving, and, you know, little kids don't want their dads to leave. Yep. So anyway, that's when we came out to Denver at that time, and we lived in Littleton. The place he worked was Martin Marietta. Today it's known as Martin Lockheed. It's in Cold Creek Canyon in Littleton, Colorado. Nothing mysterious about the plan. It's just no one knew what was really going on there with the Germans. And it's not unusual to have any kind of a military presence there. They had the MPs My dad had a detachment of MPs that were with him all the time. And a lot of it was, go ahead.
What did your dad think of the orbs around Cape Horn?
It actually happened right before they got to Cape Horn. And he said they dispatched jets. And they flew right through them. In other words, here's the orb, and the jet goes right to the same space.
Materializes. And,
yeah, but nothing happened. Nothing happened. And it didn't show up on radar either. And they thought, is it some phenomena like the Aurora Borealis that they had not uncovered on the Earth before? And they kind of rejected that. Their science team rejected that explanation. But they said, then what the hell is it? So that ended up in UFO folklore as aliens followed the Roosevelt carrier. But it's kind of funny, when sightings did it, sightings had no idea what they were really doing on that ship, which was installing nukes. My mom and I watched that together, and I said, maybe they were doing something high tech on the, because I didn't tell my mom. I didn't want her to freak out that I had information that could cause her to lose her standard of living, because he had two pensions. And he would have lost both of them, because he signed a national security order called 450 at the time. If he would have been caught, 20 years of hard labor in Leavenworth, no trial, forfeiture of all assets. I mean, they didn't mess around with this.
Did your dad ever mention anything about the deep underground military bases in America?
Yeah, he knew all about them. He said it's where they hide a lot of the technology they were developing. And he again says, I think it's alien cover stories. He knew about Dolce before Dolce even happened.
Well, I question a lot of things that happen at the Dulce base. Not that I question the poor man that was killed.
The reporter?
No, not the reporter. The geologist. What was his name?
Oh, I know. I can even see his face, but I can't think of his name.
Yeah, the one who claimed that him and Special Forces got into a firefight with Grays.
Exactly. I don't believe that for a second.
Yeah, you can have people, and look, this guy, he created a phenomenon of himself, and I can show you documentation of where the CIA has created people like that to create stories like that. So I don't always give a lot of validity to it, but what I do give validity to is that they were creating deep underground military bases that are interconnected throughout the United States with the technology that supposedly shouldn't have existed at that time, but the Nazis did have it 30, 40 years prior to us having it.
Yeah, that's true. You're exactly right. But you're right about how the CIA creates cutouts to pretend to be on the right side, but they're not. Well, Ray Epps, FBI on J6, that's probably a classic example of that strategy. We see another one now, to kind of digress for a second, this Emily Kors. She's the jury foreman in the Trump.
What a weird bird.
Yeah, but see, here's the deal. Why would she be allowed to go from MSNBC to three shows on CNN? Why didn't the prosecutors, after the first appearance, call her and say, do you want to go to jail?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. In other words, here's what's happening. This is a cutout operation from the deep state. And they've told her to do this. They're paying her to do this. So when they can't get an indictment, they can blame her.
This is what we call narratives that connect events.
Exactly.
All right. This is Doug didn't make that up. This is something that I've known about for a very, very, very long time. There's a book about that thick, about 3 or 4 inches thick, that the government has of all different types of cutouts of plans. And that's where I read it. And it says narratives and events. And it's literally wrote out by a Hollywood director. And I guess you can say in its most simplistic form that booklet is there so that we can practice scenarios. But when those scenarios end up becoming actual events, like 9/11 was one of them, and a nuclear strike, dirty bomb in the United States will be one of the next ones, you kind of go, hey, I've read this somewhere before. You know, oh yeah, gee, go figure. But here's another thing I want to get into. Moving on from the fascinating works of your father, what was it that really captured your imagination about the JFK assassination? Because you and I have had these conversations off air. I mean, if we would record the conversations that we do off air, I mean, it's probably more entertaining than what we do on air, because we're very unfiltered with the way we think about these things. But the JFK assassination really captured your mind, because you said that that event is what's prevalent now to any president who dares to speak about the truth of the black operations that the government is in.
Yeah, I interviewed, he's really an expert. He's along the lines of Jim Mars. He's that good. And I mean that in the highest compliment, Jim D. Eugenio. We had him here on the TV show in November, and he did radio here last week. And this is what I said to Jim, and he wholly endorsed the idea. I said 1947 was the creation of the deep state as we understand it. Now, we always kind of had it. The Council on Foreign Relations, the Rockefellers trying to get us into the League of Nations, which was the UN of its time. Thank God for Henry Cabot Lodge, who stopped it in the Senate. But the real coming, the real genesis of the deep state, and this is why the CIA was created, so the CIA could do the dirty work of benefactors for the power of government. And then the NSA was created to be the intelligence arm of the CIA. And it came at the same time, 1947. Roswell, some coincidence, right? The mass transportation of Nazi scientists to American facilities to reverse engineer their theories and then later their applications. So 1947 was the key year for the development of the deep state. And I said this to Jim on the air. I said, that was the genesis of the deep state. I said the coming out party for the deep state was the assassination of John Kennedy. See, this is why Kennedy was killed. And we're kind of going off script here for where we started, but I'll be happy to give you the answers, although I don't think we have time to review them. One, and a big one, was Vietnam. The Rockefeller family made a boatload of money on Vietnam. They owned Bell Helicopter. They owned Chrysler. Chrysler got 90% of all defense contracts in 1963. And so the Rockefellers, then the Federal Reserve, the silver certificates that Kennedy created, it was kind of the Bitcoin of the day, if you will. It was competition with the Fed, and the Fed did not like it. And the Fed, very, very powerful people tied to the Rothschilds. Now Kennedy's pissing off the international people. Okay. And then you had the oil depletion allowance. That was an unwarranted huge tax deduction for oil companies. And Kennedy cut it way back. He goes, no other business gets this. Why should you? And so he pissed off the oil men. And there's a lot of overlap there. The Rockefellers had their hand in Federal Reserve. They had their hands in Vietnam. They had their hands in oil. And then you just go down the line. And he pissed off the most powerful people in the country. They were determined to have a cash cow in Vietnam and fight that war as long as they could and have drug trafficking out of the region unabated for distribution in the United States to make a huge profit. And so this is why Kennedy was taken out. And here's where people are stupid. Kennedy said in October, it's ultimately the Vietnamese war to win. We're not going to commit troops. Our time there with combat advisors is limited. And the South Vietnamese president, Diem, came out and said the same thing. We don't want American troops on our street. We went through that with the French. And so here's the deal. In the first week of November, the CIA, and it's well known, they assassinated the Diem brothers. The excuse they used was, oh, gee, they were too corrupt and the South Vietnamese people weren't going to follow them. That was all bullcrap. They killed them because they wanted to have leadership that would accept American interventionism. And then 3 weeks later, John Kennedy's dead. Some coincidence, huh? So, and did you know the Dealey Plaza assassination? Do you know that they tried the same thing in Miami 10 days earlier?
Right. You want to get into that?
Yeah. The Miami police detectives were on a gun sting operation. And so they had a fake buyer that's going to buy illegal guns and they're going to bust him. And they're trying to find out how far up this goes. So in the conversation that got recorded and played on the Men Who Killed Kennedy by Nigel Turner on A&E, the recording went like this. Well, they're good guns. Hell, they're going to use them in the assassination of John Kennedy when he comes here. What? Yeah, Kennedy's going to come here and they're going to kill him from tall buildings with these same rifles. You say, these are good guns. And he says the serial numbers, you get rid of them. He's telling the story of the Kennedy assassination. Now, the Miami Police Department contacts the Secret Service. Well, they very well couldn't ignore it, could they? Okay. So they helicoptered John Kennedy into his Miami appearance. Now, here's what's interesting. 10 days later, the same damn Secret Service put him in the identical condition he would have been in Miami. What does that tell you?
So if you think this setup occurred once, it could occur twice. And who would you apply that to? A Ron DeSantis? A Donald Trump second term?
Here's the deal. We owe a great debt of gratitude to people like Jim Mars, Jim DiEugenio, Oliver Stone, who made the movie JFK, and he's still on this stuff. He and Jim DiEugenio just made a follow-up to the movie, made a documentary, four-part. If I had the details, I'd give it to you. It's not in my memory. But these people so scared the establishment because they established who it was. Hey, let me tell you this, Doug. I'll tell you who killed John Kennedy. I know the name of the man that fired the fatal headshot. His name is Lucien Sarti, identified by the lawyer of Christian David of the Corsican Mafia, the old French heroin connection. The CIA worked with the mafia, right? They tried to kill Castro. They worked. The OSS worked with the mafia in World War II to keep the Germans off the docks from sabotaging. So we know that. So the CIA goes to the mafia, Trafficante, Carlos Marcello, and so forth, and they go to where they could get white assassins for the South. Now, this is only one of three hit teams. I've never been able to fully identify the other two. But the one that was on the grassy knoll were Corsican mafia hitmen. The contract was originally offered to Christian David. And his lawyer tells the story, but he couldn't tell everything. But Christian David had to let him say, you can say this much. And so what they did was they went to Christian David and said, we want you to kill Kennedy. And he said, where? And they go, United States. No, I'm not doing that. Do you have anybody that will? He goes, yeah, Lucien Sarti. And so what he did was give the contract to Sarti. Now, what we have on the grassy knoll is the picture of Badge Man. First, it was just a fuzz. It was the Marianne Moorman photo. And now the fake FBI and Secret Service went through Dealey Plaza and seized everyone's cameras. But they missed Marianne Moorman's. She was so horrified that she stuck the camera in her purse and didn't do anything with it until 1988. She goes to Gary Mack, who is with Eastman Kodak at the time, later will become the curator of the JFK Museum, you know, the book depository. And Gary Mack and his associate, Eastman Kodak, took 4 years to create a four-generational photo. And it showed shooting goggles, gun, muzzle flash behind the grassy knoll, okay, a police emblem. And Christian David, his lawyer, told A&E and Bill Curtis and Nigel Turner, they told them, yeah, he liked to dress up in a disguise. If he's on a military base, he's going to wear a military uniform to do the hit. And next to him was a railroad man. Lee Bowers saw this. He's in the watchtower behind the picket fence. And he said, yeah, they took the gun and they folded it up and put it into a container, a railroad box. And then later other men came and got it. And Lee Bowers testified before the Warren Commission. And mysteriously, he died in a one-car accident in Midlothian, Texas. Mm-hmm. Had to wipe him out. They tried to get him to change the story during the interview, and he wouldn't. That's why they killed him. Then a reporter named Steve Revell got involved, and he was friends with Jim Mars. Steve Revell, he doesn't do anything with Kennedy now. He's still alive, living in L.A. He won't come on my show. This guy was probably the best reporter I've ever seen. He tracked down the paymaster for the whole operation. He was living in South America, blacked out his face, and his name was, oh gosh, I can't even remember now, Maldonado. And he was in South America. He was in the witness protection program. And Revell eventually tracked him down with the help of a DEA contact. And so he meets with him. This is on video, Doug. This has been on American TV, but it's now scrubbed, but it's on American TV. I've got a hard copy of, I made a video of it. So anyway, he's in the, Steve Revell travels with an assistant to South America. He interviews this guy and he says, oh yeah. He says, Oswald, not Oswald, but, Lucy Ansarti and two associates, one who was with him on the grassy knoll. I converted their heroin payment initially into American cash. And he said they laid low after the assassination for 2 weeks in Dallas. They didn't try to run. They were in a safe house. Then after the heat was off, then they escaped through Mexico and went to South America and got paid. And he asked him, where was he in the assassination? He goes, he drew up the grassy knoll. He goes, he's behind this fence. And he said, you know what kind of gun he used? He told him. And he said, but more importantly, he used a hollow point bullet. And if you think about the assassination of John Kennedy, right, the back of the head's blown out. The doctors in Dallas, like McClellan, said, you could stick your fist in the back of Kennedy's head. That's an exit wound. So he was shot, okay, from the right front, and his head went back into the left. Oswald allegedly was shooting from behind in the other direction, and they couldn't have the doctors in Dallas testify at the Warren Commission, and they didn't. McClellan never testified, ever. I mean, it's incredible. He's the guy that did the surgery that tried to keep, excuse me, he tried to keep Kennedy alive, and they never interviewed him. And that was absolutely incredible. Then they were trying to do an autopsy on him, and Earl Rose was the pathologist for the county. And he said, stop, I have to, by Texas law, do this autopsy. And they ran him over, and they were taking that body out of there no matter what. Here's what's interesting. Kennedy's brain went missing during the autopsy. It had to go missing, people, because he wasn't killed with an Italian Marcaner that Oswald had. He was killed with a hollow point bullet that Lucien Sarti shot. And then here's the other thing we know. There was a guy that everybody thought was a crackpot. His name was Gordon Arnold. Interviewed by the local media, and he said he thinks he saw the guy that killed Kennedy. He was there with his Bell & Howell 16-millimeter camera, and you see him in the Mormon photo. He's got his khaki hat. He's got his military uniform. He just got back from Alaska, and he's doing this, and then he's just horrified when he sees what happens. Well, Sarti comes up to him. He's like 5 feet away from the fence, and Sarti said, did you take pictures? He goes, yes, give me the camera. And he said he was so scared. He goes, the guy was shaking. He said, I was so scared I gave him the camera. He told the story. No one believed him until the Marianne Mormon photo went to Fourth Generation. And there's Gordon Arnold. And his interview is classic. Bill Curtis was interviewing him on TV. And he said, does this guy look familiar to you? And he pointed to a guy on the grassy knoll with this. And he goes, oh, my God, that's me. He said, my life could be in danger. If I'd have known you had this, I wouldn't have given you this interview. He freaked out. He broke into tears. And that's on American national TV. And yet people still want to talk like it's Oswald.
Right.
So, but anyway, I think we covered why Kennedy was killed. I'm telling you what happened at Dealey Plaza. By the way, all the windows were open in Dealey Plaza. That's Secret Service violation number one. Number two, Kennedy was the lead car. That's Secret Service violation number two. Number three, there were no Secret Service agents on the side of the car. That's required protocol in a hostile city. And Adlai Stevenson had been just chased down the street because people thought he was pro-black. And this was an anti-civil rights city at the time in Dallas. And so it should have been considered to be a hostile city. The motorcade changed the parade route 3 days before, and they went from where they're going 35, 40 miles an hour down Main Street to turn from Houston onto Elm. And when they go in front of the book depository up to the grassy knoll, they're going 14 miles an hour, another Secret Service violation.
And they published the route.
Yeah, they published the route, which is another Secret Service violation. By the way, the police chief of Dallas at that time was the brother of the deputy director of the CIA that was fired along with Alan Dulles for the Bay of Pigs by John Kennedy. You start seeing these connections. It's absolutely incredible. Let me tell you, you asked me a question. I want to answer it now.
Okay.
I took 15 minutes to give you the facts on why I'm going to say what I'm going to say. The work that we have done on the Kennedy assassination, particularly Jim Mars and Oliver Stone and Jim DiEugenio, the work that they, and Josiah Thompson, I got to give him credit too. The work that was done was so good. And these people, there should have been people they should have put in prison. Johnson was part of the plot. J. Edgar Hoover was part of the plot. Alan Dulles, former head of the CIA, was part of the plot. These guys should have all been executed for treason. But they know, and the establishment today knows, that we know the truth. And they, in an era where you don't have cell phones taking pictures on every 10 feet, can you imagine if they tried this today? The evidence would be overwhelming. All we had was this Zapruder film. And this Zapruder film can destroy, you know, like with a magic bullet, the timing problem, the angle problem of the shots from Oswald. It just doesn't fit. And it's only because of the Zapruder film can we do that. Today, you wouldn't have a Zapruder film. You'd have 100 or 1,000 Zapruder films from people's cell phones. They would never get away with this. The one thing that you told me one time in a private discussion, you said one of the ways that you guys had talked about how a president could be assassinated is do a mass casualty event where he's the target and they disguise it as some kind of false flag attack. And I agree with that. That's the only way they'd get away with it today. So with DeSantis and Trump, I think you're right on the money, but they're going to try to frame them. Look at Trump. Trump is just one court case after another from Democratic judges. They can't beat him in a legitimate election. And that's the key, though, legitimate election. And here's the other thing. I don't think they have to kill these guys, because as long as you have ballot harvesting in ballot boxes, you have Democrats stealing elections.
And that's a proven fact at this point with Carrie Lake.
Oh, my God. Here's the latest. I was on John Moore's show and got to talk about this on Tuesday. Great show on RBN. Everyone should listen to it. I do a roundtable with J.R. Nyquist and Stephen Bindanoon. I'll tell you, Stephen, this guy's an encyclopedia of intel information. But anyway, what I talked about was this. We now have some final figures. You have on the Arizona ballot, on the front page, the governor, the attorney general, the secretary of state, the treasurer. Those are the four main elections, and then some ancillary. And they go right in that order. The secretary of treasury race statewide got 400,000 more votes in that election than the governor's race. In Maricopa County, one county, biggest county in Arizona, it got 200,000 more votes in the secretary of treasury race. Now, let me remind people what happened. When the election doors opened in Maricopa County, we know Carrie Lake got 3 out of 4 day of voting. Okay? They knew that was coming. So they had to destroy the voting machine's capability to work, and 60% of the voting machines in Republican areas went down. Mm-hmm. The lines were out the door. People had to go to work, take their kids to school, pick them up from school. And so this was a cluster of monumental proportions, but it didn't happen in the Democratic areas. And this has clearly been shown demographically where the blues are and the reds are. And it was clearly shown that this is what happened. But here's what's interesting, Doug. It wasn't the Democrats that did this. They had some ballot fraud. No question. They had, you know, ballot harvesting, ballot boxes, and people caught people on film putting multiple ballots in these ballot boxes. By the way, a judge came along, a Democratic judge, and outlawed the filming. Can you believe that? They outlawed the filming. But anyway, what happened was in Maricopa County, with all these election problems, and I won't go into details, my own sister-in-law and my neighbor was caught up in this. And a lot of people didn't get to vote. And so there are 200,000 less votes for the governor's race than the secretary of treasury. That just doesn't happen. People don't go to election and say, I don't care about the governor. I'm just going to vote for the secretary of treasury here. And that's more important race. And that was a landslide victory for the Republican. Now, what I couldn't figure out for the longest time was I found out the voting machines were not connected. But yet we know that 60% of them went down when the polls opened to vote. So here's what's interesting. I'm speaking to the Arizona Tea Party in December. And I'm saying, I'm baffled by this. I don't know how they pulled it off, but clearly you can look at the numbers and know there's fraud. Okay, there's voter suppression on the part of the Republicans. And I said, what I'm wondering is this. Could somebody emit electrical signal from the air that was sensitive to these machines and take them down on command? I said, that's the only thing that makes sense. And I said, I know that's far out there. And there was a guy sitting in the audience. He comes up to me afterwards and he said, "Your instincts are really good, Mr. Hodges." He said, "I work for the Phoenix PD." And he says, "I'm out at the Deer Valley Airport where these planes can do exactly what you're talking about." And yeah. It happened just the way that you said it happened.
One was actually caught on flight radar that day canvassing the area.
Yes, that's right. And we have a source that sent that to us, didn't we?
Yep.
Yep. I got the same email that you got on that with the flight pattern. But he told me, and I said, "Would you come on my show anonymously?" He goes, "Not if I want to live." He was really adamant. He says, "They'll kill me. They'll kill my family." He says, "You don't know how vicious these people are." He said, "These people come through here and they kick the cops out while they talk about the technology." And because the place is guarded by the police.
Well,
it's a Phoenix PD operation.
We only have a few minutes left. And I'd like for you to be able to give a little bit of a word for people who are wanting to get into journalism or into podcasting like you and I do. Obviously, you are very much more into the journalism. I'm more into the podcasting segment. So what advice do you have for people who want to take this passion of theirs and trying to turn it into reality? What's your advice for them right now?
Well, I would tell them, don't do what I did. I had several experiences that really made me aware of what was happening. The first one was my experience with my dad, and then the follow-up with Vance Davis and Bill Pollack, and getting to meet with these high-powered people like Edgar Mitchell, who's deceased. I can mention his name now because he's gone. And then I read a book in 1980 written by my friend Pat Wood, who comes on my show a lot, called Trilaterals Over Washington, and it was so well documented. And I just said, this is real. There's people that control our government that we don't elect, and it's incredible the power they have. And Pat had it all documented. He and his author, the former late professor Anthony Sutton, co-wrote the book. So I had that. Okay, so that was 1980. My experience with Bill and Vance and so forth was in the 90s. And then my wife and I moved to our what's going to be our retirement home in rural North Maricopa County. And all of a sudden, our property rights are at stake. We could lose our home, lose our fortune, and that and 300 of my neighbors. And so I was at a public meeting for our neighborhood, and someone asked me what I thought, and I spoke for about 30 seconds. They go, "You're the spokesperson." I go, "Oh, shit, that's not what I need." And I started going on the radio, and eventually the late Pete Peterson from Wickenburg, Arizona, gave me my first radio show. Then I went to RBN, then I went independent, which is what I am today. So here's my message with this biography. Okay, I had to get kicked in the teeth. I had all this knowledge from my dad all the way up to the end of the 90s. I was involved with high-powered people, astronauts, intel, top scientists. And I was along for the ride because I knew stuff about what my dad did in paperclip. I really felt like a fish out of water. I thought, I don't belong with these people, but I was pretty fascinated by it. And I made good friends with Bill and Vance, so they kept inviting me back. And I would say, don't wait till you get kicked in the teeth like my wife and I did. Right now, if you see a need in the country that you have some expertise in, that's where you start. Tell your story as you know it. And I would say just contribute your small piece of the pie and hope it grows and be patient. I worked, gosh, fortunately I was employed, but from 2003 and I started writing articles in 2007 when I had my first radio show, I didn't even make any kind of a profit on this until about 2013 or 14. And so be prepared that this is going to be a labor of love, and be prepared that you're going to get harassed. I've interviewed two sex trafficking related stories, and my emails for both parties have been wiped off my hard drive of my computer. So I'm telling you, you're going to get harassed. I promise you. In fact, you know this story, and I should probably tell the audience this. I hope you don't have this experience, and chances are you won't. But I was on McCain's butt hard. Really hard. At the state capitol when we met, I said, I'm going to follow him around because he was running for the nomination for the GOP for president. And I said, when he goes to Connecticut, I'm going to be on Good Morning Connecticut the next day, telling what it's like to have him as a senator stealing your property. And they said, bad things happen to people that do that. Here's the bad thing. We were back at our old home, and I was doing a broadcast that night. We had about 20 family members over. Interesting, I was interviewing Jim Mars, and Andy DeRiso was on with me. About 2 minutes left in the show, boom, 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 8 shots over my house. My neighbor saw it. He went and got his M16, but they got away too soon. White men in ski masks out of a white van with a covered-up license plate. The neighbor across the street saw it. There were 24 calls to the cops. And this is when I had told him I was going to go after McCain hard. And this is where I believe this came from. And so I'm telling you, be prepared to get harassed. By the way, the police did a complete cover-up. They took 20 minutes come to a shots-fired call in an urban area. 20 minutes. And my sister-in-law, I thought, was going to get arrested. She was in these cops' faces. Where have you been? Da, 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 da. And I mean, our family was freaked. The one thing I would say, though, ladies and gentlemen, is we're fighting for our lives. Biden is setting up for the Chinese to come here and take over. And the Chinese last three foreign secretaries, defense ministers, I should say, have said, we want to exterminate all Americans. We're not interested in cohabitation in North America. They're going to kill every Canadian. They're going to kill every American. That's part of their policy. So realize that you are fighting for your life, and people are going to call you conspiracy theorist, and they're going to try to make your life uncomfortable. And I've had employment where I've had anonymous people call my bosses and say, do you know you have a conspiracy theorist working for you? And so I'll talk to him about it. I said, this is what I do. It's all fact-based. Said, I don't make up stuff. I don't issue threats. I just report what happens. And so far, I've pretty well been left alone. But we do need more people in the profession. And I'll say this too. When you get in the profession, and here's my big proviso here to all these people. Here's my big warning. There are some greedy people on our side of the fence. There's egotistical people on our side of the fence. And they want all the glory. And if it's not invented here, it's not true. They'll attack their colleagues if they feel they're getting one up on them on a story. And I've seen a lot of pettiness, a lot of jealousy, and really a lot of BS. Mm-hmm. And what I'm saying is, if you get in this business, Doug and I refuse to participate in this BS. We don't go down that road. People say things about us, we just let it roll off of us. You need to stay focused on the mission, and the mission is serving the Lord Jesus Christ and preserving our country. Those are the two missions that we have, and you need to stay on point, because it's very easy with the dynamics out here to get taken off point.
Yeah, and you warned me about all this whenever you first started to bring me on. And
was I right?
No, you were absolutely right. I never knew that the roller coaster would go this loopy. But, you know, the fight is worth it. I will say that. The fight is worth it. The people who listen to us know that we don't sensationalize. We bring you the facts. We bring up history and use history. I call it weaponizing history to remind people that there have been nefarious actions done before, and they continue to happen. And we just connect the dots for people. There are plenty of extremely intelligent people that talk with us, communicate with us on a daily, and they see the need for more shows like this, like the Doug and Dave Intel Report, like the Common Sense Show. Because if not, you're going to be captured by Fox News and CNN, and that is a written narrative by the Washington, D.C. and the CIA folks, and that's why I can't believe any of it anymore. So alternative news is where you're getting real news, and that's why they have attacked alternative news. That's why the Department of Homeland Security, whom I used to work for 10 years, came out and said that they are at war against anyone who brings up misinformation, malinformation, and disinformation. And all those three things are whatever they say it is. So
it's disagreeing with the establishment.
Absolutely. So, and that's what we do. Is. And that's what we do. And this is a risky business. I mean, people don't like the fact that you and I, for one thing, collaborated together and created our own show. And people definitely don't like the fact that I talk to you or that you talk to me. And, you know, as long as we have the providence of God over us, we're doing the right things. We're doing what we're supposed to. I have no fear of what I'm doing. You have no fear of what we're doing. And I will say this. I agree with Dave. If you have a skill set that can benefit the proud patriot American, then get out there and insert your skill set in there. If you need help with it, you know, hit me up on AmericanVindictiveShow@gmail.com. I tell people all the time, if you don't know how to set up a podcast, I did it from not knowing anything to being kind of good at it. So I can help a lot of people set up. I've actually helped at least 8 people now set up their own podcast. And you know, tonight me and Dave were
look at our background. Look at the background.
Look,
I'm on the road and we got a background. It looks like I'm back home.
Yeah, there's some guys out there that are extraordinary with this stuff, and they're in multi-million dollar studios. Dave does this out of his house. I do this out of my house. And that shows you, you don't have to have tens of thousands of dollars to start this up. Just be brave. Get on the radio or get on YouTube or whatever. Don't get yourself censored like I do every couple months by speaking too much truth. But just understand this. We need more guys and gals, by the way, out there doing what we're doing, bringing forth the truth. And that's
young people like you, young guys like you, because pretty soon, you know, I'll have to pass the torch. And I got Doug, but a lot of people, you know, you look at, and sorry, don't get mad at me out there, guys, but, you know, Doug Hagman's a dear friend of mine. Ted Brewer's getting up there in years, too. And these are all guys that are really good friends of mine. And they say the same thing about me. We need younger people to get involved. My audience is between 45 and 65. And I appreciate my audience. I've got people that have wisdom because of their age and their experience. But what we really need to have is young people that need to have their minds opened up the Marxist indoctrination of universities and from the public school system. And our kids are brainwashed, folks. They think capitalism and work ethic are dirty words. They don't buy into the work ethic. They really don't. You know, I'm in a rural community right now doing some work that I'm not going to specify, but I'll say this. Rural communities, for the most part, still have their work ethic. Their kids don't come to school with purple hair and earrings in their nose. And I don't care how kids dress, but I'm just saying the whole freakazoid demeanor of kids today, that hard work, worshiping God, these things, they laugh at this stuff because of how they're taught. And their parents are not smart enough to keep them away from the indoctrination factories of the public schools. The public schools in rural areas, they stand for the flag. They sing the national anthem. They fly flags on their house. They voted for Trump. You can drive up in the area I'm in right now, and you'll see on people's barns, don't blame me, I voted for Trump. I'm telling you, folks, you need to get out of the cities. But back to what Doug was talking about, I want to just give one more caveat here, too, to doing this. You will occasionally have people come to you with a story. And you'll vet the story and say, this is true, man. This is remarkable. Don't ever burn a source. Don't ever give a name, no matter how tempting. I'm sitting on stories I've known for years, but if I tell it, I'll fry somebody. And I won't ever do that. And people say, well, Dave, you have this unnamed source. Yeah, they're unnamed because they don't want to be dead. And they've trusted me with a story that I won't divulge who it is. And I will tell you, if I have done anything good in this business, I have kept my word to my sources. I've never burned a source. And this is why friends of friends and other sources come to me and share. And if you want to go anywhere in this business, your word has to be absolute and without any variability.
That's right. All right. Well, Dave, I think that's all we got, man. I mean, this was fantastic. I think we should be doing a few more shows like this occasionally. The crowd, I know, loves to hear more about our background, our bio. Mine's kind of boring. Yours is, I think, a little bit more interesting.
I don't know. I've lived longer than you. Give yourself a little more time. When I was your age, okay, I was still coaching high school basketball and teaching in high school, and life was good. And I was going to the gym every day, and life was good. I was happy. I did know some things, though. I mean, I did. But the thing is life was good. Enjoy your life, people. But you have a duty to your family and to your country and to your Lord. You have a duty, faith, family, freedom. And we really need people doing this. And you might be the guy who's the inside source. But ladies and gentlemen, we have to reach a critical mass right now. I can't believe Biden could go to Ukraine and give away your tax dollars for Ukrainian pensions.
$500 million.
Yeah, and crap on the people in Ohio who are going to die premature deaths, not even dispatch a representative of his administration to go there. And the reason why, this is how bad he is. He serves China. He knows China is going to come here and commit genocide. And he and the Biden crime family are your enemy. And Obama is behind him. Susan Rice is behind him. And these people want you dead. So when these people die in Ohio and this tragedy spreads down the Mississippi River and people are dying in cancer clusters over the next several years, they don't care. They don't care if millions of you die in a nuclear war that they're causing to happen. They don't care. These people serve Satan. They serve Satan. You know, I've come to this realization, Doug. People say, well, I'm kind of sitting on the fence here. No, 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 no. If you don't serve Jesus, you serve Satan. There is no in between. It's one or the other. And you have to make a declaration, everyone does, on where you stand in this issue. And once you decide that your soul is more important than your body, then you're going to start to take actions that reflect your commitment. And we need to reach more people and encourage people to act with courage. Because if we don't, we face extermination. And I'm not exaggerating when I say it. And I'm talking immediate extermination. Yes, we're going to go through a tribulation. Yes, we're going to have Jesus have to return or no flesh should be left alive. But the bottom line is right now, you face extermination, and this could happen a lot sooner than you think. Anyway, you're right, Doug. We got to close. I got to go to bed. This has been very interesting. I hope we didn't overwhelm you in the audience. Maybe this is a show you listen to in segments and you have to come back more than once. I welcome that. For my broadcast partner, Doug Thornton, I'm Dave Hodges, and you've been listening to the Doug and Dave Intel Report on the CommonSenseShow.tv. Take care.
All stations, all call signs. Prepare for transmission. This is Wrecker Actual. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine. I will repay, saith the Lord. End of transmission.